there's a gap of understanding for Australians here that is slowly, well, if not closing, it's being filled with a meeting of Indigenous generosity and settler curiosity. We're talking a lot about holistic understandings of country, one that decenters the individual, that speaks of connectedness, of place, of ecology, of culture. The elusive, I think exciting possibility of deep time expressed simultaneously with a physical present. So count us among the curious here at Blueprint. We're running a new series of conversations called Living with Country, amplifying First Nations perspectives on land management and what we mean when we talk about country. And our guest for this one has spent a fair bit of time writing, researching, seeing, explaining country, its intersections with our built environment. Her name is Danielle Hromek, a Badawang woman, the Yuin Nation, and her work specifically considers Indigenous relationships to space and to country. She's a founder of the cultural design and research consultancy Jinjama, whose clients include the New South Wales government, the City of Sydney, and she joins us now. Danielle, welcome.
Hello, hi, how are you?
Well,
first
things first, your country, describe that place for us.
I always love talking about my country. I'm from the South Coast, or at least my heritage originates there. And it's magic country down there, bounded by the ocean, of course, and mountains, and multiple rivers cross the country, magical bushlands. And of course, we know that Yuin country was so badly impacted by the recent bushfires. So there's a lot of healing going on down there at the moment as well.
Any particular places for you in that country?
Yeah, so the Budawang people are sort of in the middle, I guess-ish, but our connections come up the coast and down the coast, so around Maruya, Batemans Bay, Browley, that's where a lot of my ancestors are from, but also up to Braidwood and across the mountains a bit further as well.
Your understanding of that place and your feeling for the past and present of that place, is that something that's always been with you?
Well, our family grew up off country, and I'm probably, I think, the fourth generation who we were dispossessed in my two times great-grandmother's time. And so we have complex relationships, of course, because we also have relationships with the countries where we grew up. I feel different connections to different country as well. And that's hard to explain, and other than to say there's a spiritual connection and sort of like a motherly connection with my South Coast country. But I was born here in Sydney, and I feel a real responsibility in Sydney. A lot of my relatives are here, and certainly my ancestors came to Sydney and married in and did cultural care of place here too. And so we have relationships and responsibilities here too. And then I also have lived on the far north coast, and our family have been connected to the mid-north coast as well. And again, I feel differently and different relationships and responsibilities in those places too. It's hard to explain other than think about how you have different relationships with people and how they make you feel, and maybe that's the best way I can describe it.
Well, which strikes me as being potentially a wonderful way of doing it, because it is that sense of personality of place.
Absolutely.
Livingness of place.
Which is what country is for us. It is living, and it has communication abilities, maybe not how we communicate with mouths, but eyes or gestures, but maybe with country eyes and country mouths and country gestures and other ways that we just tap into tiny parts of it communicates with all of us. And if you think of it like that, then we all have the capacity to make that relationship and the responsibility, I think, because we're all living here.
Look, I wonder sometimes at the truth of that, and that's clearly a job of work for settler Australians, though, to sort of get to the first basis of understanding there.
Yeah.
Because our cultural heritage is so removed from that notion of place having personality, of place being that place in all time.
Yeah, I kind of feel for those who don't have this feeling. I don't know how to put it. It's not I feel sorry, but I feel like, wouldn't it be wonderful if you felt this, is what I feel. And of course, I've got European heritage too, and I guess I can relate because I've always walked into worlds. I've always had European heritage and I've always had Aboriginal heritage. And that capacity to walk into worlds is quite a gift and also a real trouble at times as well, because I talk like I do and I look like I do, but I have that heritage and that understanding that is another one as well. And I can code switch, they call it, between those two worlds, and I'm often required to. But I feel like if there was some capacity for those who don't have their heritage, you know, that deep heritage from here, to tap into that deep heritage some way. I don't know what it is, but there must be ways that you know, maybe it's going there and tapping into it, maybe not right now, but going there at some point. Or maybe there's other ways where you connect here first and then feel it backwards. But I think it's so important that we do, because that's part of what caring for country means. I know we use these words, caring for country, connecting with country, but we need to unpack them a lot and really think about what does it actually mean for all of us to care for country, not just Aboriginal people.
But I think that's sort of the really interesting part of the conversation that we're at, because we've adopted this language. You know, we now have a real familiarity with those things as sort of top-line concepts. But what that means is sort of the next and more difficult step, I think. But it's at least an achievement to be expressing these relationships in that way.
Absolutely. And for people to even be using the word country, even a few years ago, they weren't using that word. So, you know, that's a move. I'll take the small steps.
Yeah, well, I think it's probably going to be necessary.
Yeah.
What would change if that sense of place, that sense of connection was universally shared? How would the Australian broad relationship with place and country be different?
So, I'm a designer, of course, and we can talk about that in a minute, but I look at things through that filter. And I think our places would look substantially different if we were designing for this place. They would have a different character, a different personality. They would have a personality from that place rather than an imported one from somewhere else. I also think that probably we would behave a bit differently as well, not only towards place and towards country, because we would take those responsibilities seriously to care and care in a whole swathe of ways. But I would hope that our mindset about that would change in line with those ways of thinking, which are, in my mind, more matriarchal, matricentric, because if we think about it, all of us came from this planet, as far as we know. We were given birth to from planet, and we all call it most people call this planet Mother Earth. And so that's matricentric, and that comes from a different way of thinking than the one we're currently living in, which is a bit more patriarchal and patricentric. I'm being kind here with my bit mores, but
yes.
You know.
Thank you. On behalf of people like me, I appreciate that gesture. I think this is a good moment to introduce this notion of speculative design, because I suspect that's a practice which lets you embrace some of these possibilities. I mean, just what's your understanding of what that expression means?
Speculative design, in the way that I look at it, is taking a step back from the small issues and looking at the ones that society has to tackle, and the big ones, I mean, that society has to tackle. And I guess I haven't had much time to really do much speculative design lately, because I've been actually doing the design, but I've been thinking about speculative design, because in reality, most architectural responses are going to have a speculative aspect to them, because we're imagining the future and we're taking a space, then we're imagining what's going to be there in 3, 5, 50, 100 years or longer. And so it's trying to imagine all of the eventualities that you need to understand for that space. What could come here in that time frame and longer? What do we need to design for so that we don't have to redo this in 5, 10, 20, 100 and a million years, whatever it is? While my fun speculative design practice is sitting to the side, my real life speculative design practice is running at full throttle, where I'm having to imagine futures of places like Western Sydney, like Sydney Broader and other parts of the continent, and imagine what the future is going to be there in a design way, but in other ways as well, because of when I think about design, I also think about ecology. I also think about flora and fauna. I also think about the other people, the other non-human entities, country, sun, a blade of grass, a celestial being, whatever it might be that's going to have a say in that place and need to have place there.
I mean, that whole thing of design is, this is a process of imagination.
Yeah.
As you've suggested there. And any process of imagination has infinite possibility, does it not? And yet, so many, especially in this space of the physical, of the built environment, the possibilities of that imagination are sort of curtailed from the get-go. So I guess this is the job, to sort of open the possibilities there, to make those expanded?
Well, for me, it is, because of the questions that I come with, which aren't always the same that other designers come with.
For example?
How can we live in this place forever? If you think about that question alone, it'll blow your head apart for a little while.
Yes.
Because I'm asking a question that we can't even imagine. So how can we live here forever? Because at the moment, we're not designing or planning for forever. We're planning maybe for, 100 years, and sometimes it's like 10 years when I at some of the projects that I'm engaging with, or 15 years. And so when I bring that question to the design industry or to architects or to planners, it's not where they're thinking at the moment.
What do people say when you bring that question?
They kind of say what you said. Because it is asking you to think differently. It's asking us to really engage with a different way of being and to really engage with a different way of thinking. However, many are really excited by it, because it is asking us to engage with a different way of being and a different way of thinking. And it's asking a new way of design as well, where we're not trying to just plan for this building for 50 years or this park for 100 years. We're trying to plan for when this park evolves back in to planet, or whatever happens to it, or becomes something else and something new, without waste and without damage. And I think that's what designing with country comes, that idea of having country at the center of those thought processes, which is the other question I come with, is how is country going to be centered here?
I'm wondering if you can sort of describe that in terms of an example for us, or a case study perhaps. But perhaps before you do that, I wonder if, and you used the word spiritual at the very beginning of our chat, and I wonder if this idea is embracing a broader realm of place and structure than we, obviously, I guess, the one we normally bring to them, but whether that sort of jumps over into another bigger way of understanding this place and bigger way of understanding our relationship to it, which isn't as sort of prosaic as the normal ones that we attach. It is more of that thing of spirit, of broad sense.
Absolutely. It's about spirit of place. The spirit of all of the entities of place, the diversity of those and how they can all play together, wondering about what that spirit might share back to us, what the country can read back to us or communicate back to us that can be hints for design, or major directions, which I've seen as well, for design as well. If that's the case, then it does open a lot of doors and ask different ways of understanding as well. Because if you're not thinking about spirit normally and you think that spirit's religion, then a lot of people will block that off. But for Aboriginal people, it's really not about religion specifically. It's a whole other way.
Tell us about Jinjaba, your practice, design and research practice.
Yeah. Well, I never meant to start a business, but it has come about in terms of, firstly, community and particularly elders asking me to help them with things and needing a space for that to happen. And that's been such a gift for those relationships and for those people to be recognised in that way. It's also a space that I needed to have projects that I was going to work on and develop alongside architects and designers, but also bring community members and elders into. Mm. It's also a thinking space for me. So, you know, when I said I need some time to think, that's sort of where I have to go when I do it, I guess. We do a lot of different types of projects. It's mainly me, but I bring in some other lovely Aboriginal people to work with me on projects who have different skill sets. One day maybe it'll grow beyond that. I'm content to be small because, you know, you can be nimble at that point.
Give us an example of a project and describe then that process of bringing other minds to it.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you two. I've been working for a while in all of that work that's going on in Western Sydney. And part of that is with some collaborators, Hassel, who are an architecture and design firm. Mm-hmm. They're fantastic and bring me in like a collaborator, which is nice, like a colleague. We developed guidelines in relation to the planning out there. And what I did for that project was I went to my elders and I said, I'm worried about what's going to, and this isn't the language that I use because I was more than worried about what's going to happen here. And I want to know what you want me to tell these people who are going to do this. And so they gave me guidelines and then I just worked with my collaborators and also with the clients to find ways to filter those in. And some of them were really direct things like the water out there is sacred and it's all connected. And if you damage one part of the water, you're going to damage all of the water. And if you look at the creek systems in Waianamata or Aerotropolis or other names that are out there that I don't like to use because I don't agree with them, they are all connected. But they're connected in our stories, our deep stories as well, our deep histories. And so I was able to then talk to water companies and people who are designing for water and to Sydney Water and help them and also water scientists. And they were able to hear what my concerns were and I was able to help them come up with, well, I don't think I helped them. I think I just said, this is the worry that we have. But they got it and they listened and I have to commend them on that listening.
Yeah.
I was saying stuff that they would never have heard before. But it wasn't from me, it was from my elders who were worried and I was just able to translate it for them. Now, I've just given the water example as one, but it was also in the architectural responses, it's also in the how things are laid out, it's where Aboriginal people are going to be potentially offered space there, how, you know, housing, those kind of things. So it's a huge scale.
Big steps.
Yeah. And, you know, I might die before we see the end of that project. So I have to do some smaller ones too, because otherwise I will never feel like I achieve anything. And the other one I want to talk to you about is a project I've been working on with Uni of New South Wales in the Alumni Park. And it's just being installed at the moment and we're getting some of the first images of it. And I was asked to curate this project alongside, I was asked to bring artists in and they were very keen that the community were involved and they were heavily involved and really guided the project. And I was able to bring my elders, Uncle Greg Sims, Auntie Margie Dixon and Uncle China Timbury in particular. And there are a few others who have also guided this, along with my colleague, Samantha Rich, who's an architect and a Wiradjuri architect. And it's really an integrated art project and it's describing that place. It's describing what has that place has always meant to those people, the long stories of it, and how those long stories can then help current Aboriginal people like students or staff feel belonging there. And so it's a really, you know, that one I can see the end of and I can actually go, well, I won't die before I see the end of that project and I can actually feel like I've achieved something. But there are those, you know, everything in between those two as well that I work on. And that's where my work's so exciting because it is so many scales, so many places, and I get to talk to so many clever people, clever community members, but also clever non-Indigenous people who help bring these into realisation.
Before we go, Danielle, and I'm reluctant to end this conversation because it is energetic and illuminating, but your exhibition Defying the Grid.
Yeah.
Tell us about
that. That one's such a lovely one. That one was with my mum, Robin, and my sister, Shan. And it's a... It was in Canberra Museum and Gallery at the end of 2019, early 2020. And it's actually, we've just posted the nets that are part of that exhibition down to the Linden Art Gallery as part of Melbourne Fringe Festival. I won't get to see it. So if anyone's in Melbourne and can go and take some photos for me,
well, hopefully I'm Melbourne in. Will get to see it too.
Hopefully Melbourne gets to see it. But it's such a lovely project because, you know, we got to work as family and as kin and as women. And we also brought in some of the other members of our family who contributed small parts but meaningful. My grandmother's voice, my great-grandmother's doily, my auntie Lynn's, she crocheted some nuts and my other cousin Jenny's did some other crochet work, and my cousin Leighton made a beautiful wooden spoon. And all of it was about really connecting ourselves with our culture and with our country on the South Coast. So we made, my mum and sister and I made nets, and we made other woven objects as well. And we chose the colours that we dyed the nets very carefully based on the colours of our country. We chose the things that we wove into the nets as part of understandings of that country. Hmm. And what we were also trying to comment on is how that grid, that colonial grid that got put up, got sort of plonked down on top of country, didn't understand Aboriginal ways of understanding country and our longer stories and our history. And that Aboriginal people still engage with urban centres and they still live there in greater numbers than what people even imagine, and still have belonging and responsibility and caring for country in those places. And while we were using these really ancient ways of making, we were having conversations about what this meant to us, and it got woven in. And that's why it's such a lovely project, because of those memories that get woven into these type of projects where you can, you get to always remember what you were thinking of at that time and always be able to step back into that time and go, oh, that was nice, wasn't it, with my mum and sister.
Danielle, thank you so very much. It's generous of you to spare so much time and so many thoughts with us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Danielle Chromick, a spatial speculative designer, artist, founder of the cultural design and research consultancy Jinjama. And she's joined us in this new series of conversations here on Blueprint, Living with Country. We're bringing together First Nations perspectives on land and management. What it is that we mean when we talk about country. This is Blueprint, Radio National.